So Bobby's going to present on implementing eHealth EMR for low-resource hospitals in developing countries.
So welcome. Thank you, everyone, for being here this afternoon. Again, I'm Bobby Jefferson from Futures Group. I'm the PI on one of the CDC HMS grants in Kenya and other initiatives around Central Asia Republic and other HMS. I also like to introduce Dr. Shannon Hayter. She is the Center Director for Health Solutions at Future. And my colleague from Kenya, Veronica Murthy, she's having her presentation this afternoon as well, which will be the sort of outcome results analysis piece, much more data focused as well. So I invite you to ask questions from each of us, and we'll try to respond as best we can. So first, I'm going to just give you a quick overview about what a low-resource environment is. I don't want to assume that you know, but just in case, just reinforce the information you've already learned. And then just our approach. Again, you know, we've been working in many countries, so some of the approaches, some solutions, and really just want to engage in a discussion of sharing information and knowledge. Rather than saying that we have just the solution, I'd rather, you know, learn also from people asking questions. So we work right now under our program, our Age Relief program, and within Futures, across 15 countries and supporting about 1,033 hospitals. It changes, but that's how many hospitals, and that includes satellite facilities, ANC, PNCCT sites, and in Tanzania, we just increased from 535 sites up to 750. ANC, PNCCT sites that we're monitoring now. So very large number of hospital sites, facilities, satellites across different countries are English, Francophile speaking, and the target of the areas of support for us is rural, remote, and people who have to serve the poorest of the poor, and Ministry of Health facilities. So these are, again, in our, you know, world, very low resource. You know, they don't have big servers, they don't have fancy computers, they have intermittent power, they lack IT staff, they don't have, you know, internet, sparse mobile phone coverage. So my question I'm putting to you, as you're sitting here, if the director of CDC comes to you this afternoon and says, on Monday, you're leaving here and you're going to rural Nigeria, and you have to start and maintain the medical record system here in Gimbu. My question to you is, what do you do? What types of solutions, systems, approach are you going to do today, right now? Not in the future, but right now. You're getting on the plane. So that's the sort of approach that we try to take, is giving you a solution that you can use right away. So this is Gimbu. It's one of the remote sites in Nigeria. We worked there since about 2005, 2006. You fly to Abuja, and then you fly to the region. You drive 5-6 hours, you get out of the car, and you walk up the side of the mountain. And your IT system has to work there. And the people who are at that hospital, it's a fantastic hospital, when they have a problem, they can't pick up the phone and just call you. My system doesn't work. They may not even have power to call you. So that's the sort of approach and sort of environment I'm trying to set as to the type of solution sets that we're trying to offer. So just for mental models, think of it as, you know, we have quite a number of facilities, and then on the right hand, the x-axis, you know, the hospitals and facilities that are around the cities or the district areas, they can have internet or broadband or dial-up, and, you know, you can do reasonable informatics solutions, even online and cloud-based, with people who have good internet connections in those countries and facilities. Then when you get away from the city and you start going out to the regions, you know, and getting further out, then the power is an issue. You can't buy computers for everyone. You know, it's difficult to buy a computer for, you know, 500 to 700 facilities, even if you're Ministry of Health or CDC or USAID. So then you have to start looking at other technologies, and that's when mobile phone becomes an attractive option, you know, because you just be able to use a mobile phone or solar mobile phone. That's what we use. If I can pass it around. So again, to address some of the issues of power, I use a solar mobile phone. And then, you know, those smartphones, those fancy phones, those $100 phones you have, you carry around, that's great. But when you get out to these regions, then people just have regular cell phones. They can do text, SMS maybe, because it's incoming, it's free. But they tend not to have, you know, smartphones. And then again, you have to judge. You're going on Monday. You're going to buy 1,000 smartphones for all the project and all the and within your grant. So again, we're trying to be cost conscious and making sure that's addressed. So phones that people have in their hands tend to be, you know, good enough or having solutions that meet that. And then once you start working in the areas we work in, now you have to address there's no internet. There's very sparse mobile phone coverage, so you can't assume the mobile phone works. And now you have intermittent power. So how do you develop an IT solution or health informatics solutions or EMR that addresses that quadrant there? And so that's what we're going to just, you know, show a little bit, engage in a discussion, and hopefully, you know, be able to arrive at some consensus. So for these low-resource environments, they still have medical staff. They have nurses. They have clinical staff. And they need the data. They need good, high-quality information, whether or not it's paper or electronic. Our emphasis is not so much on the IT system itself. Our emphasis is on, can you capture and report on good quality data that the clinicians and others can use to make a decision? So we try to take the sort of the bottled water effect, where the water coming in that you're using the bottled water has been filtered and it's been cleaned and trustworthy. And so you buy that bottle of water because you trust that it's clean, it's ready. So we take that similar approach to our data. We make sure that data is being captured, is being cleaned up front. So that way the data that's in the system, you can make an absolute clinical decision on and upwards. And so that's the approach that we've taken. But we've noticed that, especially in a lot of the countries we work in, that the sort of the funding has been very vertical. So you'll have an HIV program, and then you'll have a standalone PMTCT program, and then you'll have a standalone TB program. And they won't even talk to each other. They don't share the same identifiers. It's the same patient. But yet these programs all are vertical. And so there isn't a linkages or strong referrals between the different types of vertical programs. And then also in the places that we work, they don't have funds for proprietary licenses. So, you know, an Oracle type solution works great, maybe if you're in the city area type of quadrant. But when you go out to where, you know, the remote rural sites and where they don't have a lot of funds or the funds, you know, is very little from the ministry, then again, the proprietary licenses and solutions tend to fall off as soon as your funding leaves. So then your sustainability is at risk. So we've tried to really stay away from anything that requires yearly maintenance fees, just based on our experience. And I like to say, I'm very pleased to meet my colleagues from Ethiopia. We were talking earlier that we've been involved in this work and addressing these type of issues since for the last 12, 13 years when we looked at other technologies and solutions. And so we've sort of been there when the funding has dried up in one program and the solutions for, and the IT programmers from the U.S. left and the consultants left, and they were stuck there with, okay, we've got the software, we've got this nice fancy smartphone, I dropped it, it's broken, it's not no in-country warranty, I can't get it repaired, now what do I do? So again, you know, we try to be there, try to provide solutions for the long term, for the real, what we believe is sustainability. So this is our approach, or I'm open to other approaches, but our approach that we've seen that worked across many countries is to use freely available reusable tools. So software solutions that you can reuse and over from one country to another country without costs and license. And then having things coded in country. So right now we have a software development team that's in Kenya and in South Africa and India, but we don't have a software development team in the U.S. All our IT staff are local in Africa or Asia or somewhere else. They don't sit here in the U.S. And then what we try to do as an approach is say, what types of technologies can be used across multiple countries? Because sometimes we find that a particular solution works well in one country, but as soon as you try to convert it to French, or as soon as you try to convert it to Spanish, now that same solution set doesn't quite work. It's not as robust. So we really tried very hard to make sure that the technologies we use works across multiple countries and multi-language. For the reference grid that we work in, offline disconnected solutions, meaning solutions that don't require internet, where you just have forget a desktop, forget a laptop. You have a $200 netbook, and it's a used netbook that maybe was donated by DFID. And you have to have your software work on that small footprint. Because again, you're leaving Monday, you can put it, the solution in your backpack onto the netbook and travel with it, with you to the field. So that's been our approach. Again, local programmers, local IT staff. The emphasis for the local IT staff also has to do with training the folks both at the local level, but also at the ministry. So whatever solution you have eventually has to be owned by the Ministry of Health. And so we found that having skill sets that are transferable to the ministry is important. So even though we can come up with a fancy, great technology, if we can't transfer those IT skills to the ministry in terms of either SQL or some coding, then it becomes less sustainable. So we've tried very hard to make sure that the technology and the tools can be easily transferred to the ministry, or at least, you know, we can be supported by them. The one thing we do bring is project management processes, software development processes. We think that's something, you know, Dr. Janice Richards had a fantastic presentation on informatics competencies. And we think that's a key importance in order to making projects sustainable. You know, so the project management piece of not having the software programmers on the field, that they're the hero programmers. They know how to do spaghetti code. But no, we try to introduce a process. So we use agile process. You know, you can use software, other processes. But what we think is missing, you know, we've seen a lot of the projects, is that project management element. You know, the scheduling, use cases, those sort of artifacts. And so we try to at least bring that in terms of training and support, even with the software. And I'll show you what that looks like as well, some of those artifacts. Then we target inexpensive, you know, hardware architecture. So we love netbooks. We love small footprint. We've been working with Intel and Samsung. They just announced a month ago a solar netbook. So it's a netbook and it has a solar panel on the back. And once it charges for 2 weeks without recharge. We have a couple in order. I wasn't able to bring it today. That's why I just brought the solar mobile phone. But that we see that as a nice potential solution for the areas that we work in. And then, again, things that leverage SMS instead of smartphones. And then how to address the power, intermittent power issues. What we've done, for example, in Nigeria, where at one day out of five, they'll have power. So the Nigerian Power Authority, NAPAD, they'll give you a facility, the remote facility, one day out of five. So any system that requires power, internet, you know, you're restricted. So we buy inverters. So we try to, you know, have some inverters in there that they'll charge for the day, and that gives them an extra couple of days of power. Plus, we try to install and use laptops and netbooks at those facilities, because you can then swap out and put in extra battery on the netbook. So we try to drive towards that type of solution rather than a traditional desktop model. So we've created, again, a set of solutions we call IQ Solutions. And so one of the EMRs is called IQ Care. And while the quick demonstration of that, it's been assessed by CDC Atlanta. So Zen and Steve Young, Asa Branch and others, they came, they visited the sites, they did an assessment. WHO, Chris Bailey's folks did an assessment of the EMR. The USAID folks came in and did yet another assessment. And then this week, we're undergoing technical assessment by Ministry of Health in Kenya. The NASCOP and the MOH are doing another assessment this week. So we so far have gotten, you know, really good reviews and gold stars by all the assessors. So it's a solid system in terms of data quality, and that's been our approach. Then in Rwanda, we're using IQ Chart, which is, again, a French language, and it's specifically for the ministry. We're using mobile phone solutions, dashboards. One of the key elements we try to talk about to the ministries and others, and even though you bring in these great computer systems, is virus remediation. Because they go to a cyber cafe, and they stick the USB drive in, they download, they put music, or sometimes at some of the hospitals, they'll have an internet cafe at the hospital itself to generate income. So they'll have that families come visit, and as the families are visiting, they'll charge them, you know, a small amount for internet. And then they'll download viruses, they'll download malware, and they don't know how to get rid of it. And then that impacts your program because it impacts the software that's running on the program. So we have a couple of days of virus remediation training to help them sort through those issues as well. So we see that it's sort of, again, not necessarily just a technology piece, but how to protect the investment that, you know, that you've put into the program. And then ultimately for us, it's all about information use and data. How can they use the information and the data to make decisions? So again, for the IQ Care EMR, it's a patient-level electronic medical record system. We went from paper to electronic. It's both does retrospective and e-clinic or e-first. And it's set up and used in the labs and all of that. We'll take you through it. Also, we were a Stockholm Challenge finalist as well, so it is great that you that you mentioned that earlier. That's fantastic. Just for the technology geeks, it's a browser-based platform, so instead of using WinForms, we use a browser for the solution. You don't need internet, so you just have a browser, SQL Express, which is free, .NET, and for security, we use OpenSSL, so you have secure encryption on each part of the links. We have a black hat team in South Africa that likes to hack around a bit, so we made sure and we sort of do a little black hat test to make sure that there's no data going across the system. A lot of EMRs we've seen, they don't have the sort of security and encryptions and things turned on. And in countries like Nigeria, you'll get journalists and others who'll drive by these hospitals and they'll try to tap into the wireless. Because they're looking to see what local politician is receiving services, are they HIV positive, or they, so they can write about it. So, we provide both training and of how to, reduce the security risk around your wireless, in addition to making sure things are encrypted at all links and the database itself can be encrypted. There's a little SQL encryption you turn on and off as well. So we're very, cognizant of the, in addition to the patient level, privacy. I'm very familiar in my old life, used to do 21 TFR 11, types of coding. And so, we try to really adhere to that type of model. But then with the software, again, since it's a remote, we try to make sure that not only you get the software and the user manual, but you get the entity relationship diagram, you get the data dictionary, the use cases, the business rules. All the components and artifacts that are needed to build up the system are provided in the software as well. So I'll show you that just so as a proof point. And so, what we tried to do is say, you're at the hospital now, you've got this backpack, you've got this netbook, it has a solution. Well, there may be an existing solution already. So some of the ministries are already using DHIS. So we're using SDMX HD to be able to, report into that. Or they may have a one-off or an existing lab system. And, we use HL7, in order to produce an HL7 file format. The other part that we're working on is a nice interaction with costing software. Because what's happening in these reduced costs and budget-tight environments, you need your costing and financial data to be able to, as part of your EMR, be able to make decisions as well now. So instead of just having the EMR separate than financial and cost, we sort of have joined that together so you can understand how much it costs to treat a patient, the cost per drugs, the unit costs, for over time as well. So we're very much integrating that. We're working with a number of the mHealth folks. And so, they have existing mobile phone solutions. We're just integrating those together, or we have our own, but we're just leveraging that. And then, many facilities already have a pharmacy system, the MSH ADT, the ARV dispensing tool, and others. And again, our approach has been sort of platform neutral. As long as it runs an Intel, platform and has a chip in it, we're happy. We're not trying to force any particular hardware or software solution on anyone. It's whatever really works for your context. So just some of the Kenya sort of results, and again, my colleague Veronica will have a much more detailed, specific results around Kenya about the impact the medical records have made to patients. So this one is just, so we've been able to do in Kenya, for example, is create PNTT forms and sort of integrate this approach of how to integrate, three interlinked patient monitoring systems, HIV, TB, and PNTT. So we've taken that approach as well. The MOH blue card is completely coded up. And you know, we've got to the point of training data managers. Using these systems, you improve workflow, you know, all those great things you always hear. But some of the sort of footprint, you know, we're serving, like in Kenya, 118,000 patients, 51,000 ART patients, you know, 4 million database transactions across the different sites. But what's important for us is the ART follow-up, that what we're seeing is the clinicians and the facilities are doing a lot of following up of patients. And that's important, especially for adherence. And so we're really, you know, are pleased to see that, and we provide some data and reports around follow-up, and then the lab and pharmacy visit. So again, having data that's captured that can make decisions going forward. And this is just from the latest training that was held in Kenya of 60 users. This is for the Walter Reed and the Kenya DoD folks. And so they'll be the latest users of the system because they're trained up as well. So what I'd like to do now is, if you have a laptop, again, I believe in proof points. Don't believe what I say. Just here's the website. I installed the local version on the cloud. And here's a user ID and password. And if you can just, if user one is unavailable, you can go up to user two, user three, user four. I put up the user 10 in there. So for those online, I'm pretty sure we'll try this as well. But I'll just go to this exact same site and log in and just be able to see some of that. So here's the IQ Care initial login window. Again, if you're logging in, you just type in user one or user two if that's busy, or user three. The password's the same as number one, and you have to select the facility as a demo site. So this is just a demo version running in the cloud. For now, let me log in as admin. And if you could let me know how much time. Now, the first thing you see is what we call a facility homepage, where it has facility statistics. And what this does is, if you're the mounting evaluation person or the medical doctor, and you want to know how many active patients, how many lost to follow-up patients I have, you don't have to go searching and running around and finding a report. It's right there for you, and you'll be able to click. So, and we've organized it according to disease areas. So, you know, the HIV, things that you care about, so the HIV, PMCTT, EID, exposed infants, the TB, we've extended IQ Care beyond HIV. So right now I just have HIV, PMCTT, TB. You can put other ones in here. You can do malaria, you can do immunization, you can do other forms as well. But let's say you wanted to know the total number of active patients. I just click on it and the results are there. So here I have two active patients. Here's their ID, their information. And so what that does is give you that data quality check that says, I'm reporting I have two. Let me really verify and see that I have two. So again, what we're trying to do is make sure sort of the concept is, you know, data custody, that from the time it's captured all the way to it's reported, that we've ensured that it's audited, it checked, and verified and cleaned along the way. And let me just do a quick find patient. Here's our find patient screen. The number of patients that we have is just for demo purposes. And then some patients, again, they are reporting at the PMTCT site, but they also have TB, and maybe if they're, you know, an infant as well. And so we can integrate across different disease areas a single patient without having to have separate registers and separate forms. So let me just pull for one example. One patient, and let's just say the PMTCT area. And so this is what the patient profile looks like. This is the summary. This is for clinicians to be able to say, okay, you know, what's just the summary information about this particular patient at the case level? And again, the system is set up so that the clinicians and the hospitals can design this the way they want, just like on the other pages. And let me just do one more. Because what we see quite often, for example, is you may have a PMTCT patient or HIV patient, and now they have TB. And so you can now, you know, just give them a enrollment ID number and a TB number, save, Okay? And so now we've enabled the TB module. So you can create any disease module you want. So today it's HIV, then the PNCCT, then the TB, then the malaria. You can create that, and we keep that single patient entity across all those disease areas. And then same with children. So if that one patient, if she has two or three children, you can also track her by, so it's family, we call family-centered care approach. And then again, it's the summary information. So if I go into the TB module, what we've done is we said, okay, there's some minimal data sets across different countries that we looked at, for example, for TB. And so you can, you know, select, you know, the TB screening, the status, they confirm they're on treatment, the treatment start date. Now, if you notice, the date is in day, month, year. That's on purpose. We learned the hard way that if you put out your date that way, then no one gets confused with the U.S. versus European format of dates. So when you run a report, you know, 12-1 and 1-12 are very different dates, but you run a query report from U.S. And you're in Kenya and you're sending it to someone, it avoids confusion. So we purposely have chosen that sort of method of addressing date issues and just small things like that. And let me just select. And I won't be able to save it because, again, I'm logged in as a demo. But, again, just trying to show you. So for this TB form, if you have your own TB form, you can build and add additional indicators and data capture elements to this. You're not restricted to what we have. You have the freedom to be able to, We give you the capability to do that. So under the help is the best section. So for those online, if you go to the help first, We try to take a zero-friction approach where we try to give you as much training as you need to get going, but, you know, we realize that not everyone has necessarily the skill sets. So this is just an example. Here's the HL7 implementation, so that way we can produce an HL7 file without problems. That ICD coding is there. Let me just go to the form builder. So we have the application that's running. And in order to, you can create your new area. So if you want to create something for OVCs, so if you have an OVC program that you need to integrate into your HIV program, you can do that. Or if you have a male circumcision program that you need to integrate into your HIV program, you can, or your existing hospital, you can do that without having to change or modify or a new system at all. And the way that works is, again, we have a process that allows you to build your own form. So not just field, but forms. So you start off with your paper form, paper medical record form, and then you go through the process of making the updates. You can select, you know, sometimes it's easier to go left to right for entry information. Other times it's vertical. We allow you in the UI to select how you want to arrange that because you don't necessarily want to mimic exactly the paper form. What happens if you mimic exactly is, for example, if you have a field for allergy and that allergy is left blank on the paper form. Does that mean the person doesn't have an allergy or the question wasn't asked? And so again, electronic system, you can be able to address those sorts of things versus just a paper form, it's just blank. You don't know what happened there. So once you create your form, you can then publish it to IQ Care and make it available, and then you can look at it, and then once you see that you like it, you can use it. Otherwise, you can say, no, let me unpublish it. Let me make it inactive. That's not the form that I need. Because what we encourage is for you not to create a form and just use it. Create a form and allow users to interact with it. So that way, they'll tell you, no, I don't want a drop-down list. I want a multi-select list. Or, no, I need a data quality check here. And so that's been our process. That's what we have republishing. You need that interaction. So what we're trying to do is give you the ability to modify and change and add other areas without us, without programmers, without IT people being involved. And then just my last piece is, so in case you need, you know, you've got people who are IT literate, if they want to know, for example, we include, you know, all the business rules for how the homepage was created and the SQL code behind it as well, the business rules for, you know, for every graph, every report is included, and we include the data dictionary as well on the back end side. So if you want to generate your own queries, you want to change the system, you want to change the database, it's there, it's open, you can do it, you can reuse it. If you want to change it from one country to another, you know, that you have that capability. All that comes with the install. Right? So all of the sort of artifacts and data that you need to support a system or to modify the system is there. It's in there. So, and it's quite detailed as well. So I don't want to spend too much time, just show you, you know, broad overview. I'll just jump back to the presentation. Again, the site is up, it's on the cloud. You know, you can definitely, you know, we encourage for you to try. And if you have questions, you know, they can email me. How much time?
Probably about 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, I'll quickly go through. So I'm going up the scale a bit now. We're at places that don't have internet and don't have computers, and you're responsible for 500 sites, and you have to report. And it's all by paper, and the paper changes every month every year, because it's Ministry of Health. They're always adding another indicator or another report. So we use a mobile phone reporting system called IQSMS. And this is actual in Tanzania. We have to do 4 monthly reports. And this is the community health worker. She's sitting at a PNCCT site, and she's filling out the register. She's doing the aggregate information, and she's sending it by text, by SMS text. So the way the system works is you send the PMTCT report, she just sends it in, and we have a netbook set up in Dar es Salaam, and it has a USB modems, about 3 or 4 of them. It reads the incoming text, it then checks for data quality. You can't, you know, and sends a data quality message back of saying, oh, you had a problem, you can't have -1 people reported, you know, in case there's a typo. So a lot of data quality checks up front. Once it passes data quality check, the SMS message, then we put it into a database format. And so now we can aggregate 300, 400, 500 sites that are doing monthly reporting all into one single database platform. But then the question is, well, that's great, you Western people, you're nice, you can report directly, but what about the district officers? How do they have access to this data as well? So what we've done is we instituted a query by mobile phone. So you can send like Q1 or Q2, and that means send me the quarterly reports for my district for quarter 1. And the district officer, he sends that in, it goes into the system, it generates the report, and it sends it back both by to the SMS as aggregate summaries and to the person's email. And what they receive back is this. They receive back a graph. So what we try to do is make sure is how to send data in, that's okay, but how to get data out and start querying systems back and forth all using mobile phones. Not smartphones, not any fancy phones. And the reason why we can't, you know, in our sort of environment, smartphones tend not to work is because when we looked at sort of the staff for training for these mobile phones, we asked them, have you ever used your phone for SMS? 52% have never used their phone for SMS in our sites in Tanzania. So again, you know, our assumption is just because someone has a phone doesn't necessarily mean they know how to use it or use the capabilities because of the age group that we're working with. And then a lot of places in our, they share the phone. So even if they have a phone, they'll give it to someone else, or the husband will give it to the wife, or their family is shared. So you don't want to have patient, you know, you don't want to have health information data just sitting on the mobile phone that's being shared. You know, we asked them, you know, are the small buttons of the phone the problem? And then they really wanted Swahili. So, you know, we eventually did things in English. Hey, you have bad data set. We had to convert all that to Swahili. Because they don't use, in the rural areas, they don't understand English. So we did that. And the whole report, we made into a big poster. So the big poster, we put it in the facility, and we showed them how to make the report by mobile phone. And that way, when that nurse, when she changes jobs, when she leaves, and a new person comes in, and we can't train them, all she has to do, the next person the next month, is just follow the format on the poster of the wall and send in the report. And then, again, this is some of the barriers that we've seen across is been the mobile phone network. Because, again, in the countries that we work in, this is, for people who don't know, this is Tanzania, Dar es Salaam. We have a number of sites in Mwanza and a few other places. And this is the mobile phone coverage for one of the large telco providers. And you can see there's large gaps just in mobile phone coverage in Tanzania and other places. So, again, just going up that picture of mobile phones, it's a good solution as well, but you know, there's no one solution that can fit all the hospitals, facilities, across all the programs. That's my hypothesis. And then lastly, we try to make it so that whatever tool they're using, they have their own mobile phone, they're using Access, they know Excel, just use whatever they have in hand that they know in order to send in the reports. You know, instead of trying to force feeding different technologies that people aren't necessarily used to, you can the technology guys can figure out a way to translate the file they're using into an XML or some other encrypted file and send it in. And then my last piece is just so before you start doing, we recommend before you start running off and doing IT projects and mobile phone projects, they at least do an initial assessment of the facility first to see where they are. And then you do your mobile project and your IT project, so then you can have an ability to gauge the impact and change that you've done to the project or program and measure that progress. So we've done that. We have a call as a site capacity assessment dashboard. You can go to the link there. I'll just show it what it looks like. I won't take much time. I think it's that one. Nope. Here's the first one, sorry. Ah, there it is. Again, it's a demo. And what we do here is just, you know, when you first go in and do your health informatics assessment, what it allows you to do is, let's come back to that. You can select across different areas within a hospital or facility, you know, if it's HIV or nursing or especially SI, or which includes HIMS. And the red means you did an assessment and they're not meeting some minimal standards. And, you know, for transitional sustainability, the yellow means they're approaching, green means they're, you know, they're sustainable or they're at transition. And the blue means this is the best practice. That what they're doing or SOP that they're following or the area they have is the best practice and should be, you know, really highlighted. And so let me just quickly just pick one country. I'll just pick Senegal. And again, if I look at the segments, you'll see immediately it's all just rural because that's the places that we work. So here's two sites. The total overall score was 2.86. I mean, that on a scale, they're approaching minimal standard. They're missing some key critical elements you need for either health informatics or SI. Let's drill down a bit into that, and that should reveal the actual. Oh, looks like other people are getting on now. You just do that while that's going. Yeah. So here's the actual scoring across the different, here's for SI, and again, they had a low score of 2.8, which isn't quite meet. And these are the questions that we were asking, you know. Can they handle IT maintenance? Can they do backups and support? Is there privacy? You know, do they have job descriptions for HIMS staff and IT staff? So again, we did an assessment before we did the IT part so we can see where they were, and then we will know afterwards. And then wherever they have the red or the yellow, we don't just leave that with them. We also build what's called an action plan. So you can build an action plan to share with them how to go from the yellows or the reds to being sustainable, to build up their capacity. So again, let me just choose back to Senegal. And in this case, it was the strategic information that was low. And here are the questions, you know, can they handle the maintenance of hardware and software? Are the computers locked up? Some places they don't have computers locked up, they get stolen. I can now create, let me submit the indicators. I chose SI. I can create an action plan. And then we can work together on this action plan to help, you know, build your capacity. So the action plan has specific steps. First, we look at, for the SI, there's some best practices around, you know, SOPs and viruses and data collection. And here are the links and the knowledge base around those SOPs and the things that they should do, you know, recommended. And then here's the actual specific steps, you know, that if they don't, you know, need to have at least one person assigned to handle IT staff. For M&E computers, they should be locked and put away during core hours. So we work one-on-one with them directly to be able to, so they know what they need to do the next following year to increase their capacity to sustain the IT part. So again, it's not just dumping technology and that sort of thing. So we're not the only ones using this software. It's free, it's open, and we're letting, you know, others use it. So in Rwanda, we have IQchart used by Columbia, IntraHealth, EggPath, FHI, in Sudan, we've got IntraHealth, Kenya, Ministry of Health, we've got some universities, you know, so we're just trying to show here, and then Guatemala, you know, just been recently there, It's free, it's open, we're trying to share, we're not trying to keep anything, we're not making money off of this, it's all free software. So that's been, you know, our approach so far to, you know, EMRs and health informatics. We have a website, we're going to be putting all the software on SourceForge. We had it there a couple years ago and they did a redo, it'll be there again, but you can contact me. And for those online, you can contact me. I'm not going to put the at sign. I get too many weird emails. So just, you know, bjefferson@futuresgroup.com or Lynette as well. So thank you. I apologize for rushing, but I gave you the links. You can proof point. You can try it on your own. Don't have to wait for me. So
thank you very much.
All right.
We have time for maybe one or two questions. So anyone in the back? Yes, sir.
Yes. So the evaluation and the validations of the instrument. So we worked as part of the consortium with University of Maryland, and so we used as the basis their initial instrument for clinical. And what we did was we actually did pilot testing within a number, about four countries first to validate not just the instrument but also the evaluation questions themselves to see if it would lead to spurious results or any outliers. So they spent at least a solid 6 months just on the instrument itself, making sure it was clear and understandable and that it can provide the results that we needed. So I can share that with you. On at CRS's website,